Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back after missing the Monday show. The Wednesday show is here, and I am doing this on very little sleep, but I'm going to have enough in the tank to talk about the Oli Roos and the Socceroos, and who better to join me than our WA's finest, in Matthew Olsen. because his time zone is like 9 years behind the rest of the universe, is able to join me. What is it, 6:30 where you are right now?
Yeah,
to talk about our national team. So how's things?
Well, 4 a.m. wake up call for the Oli Roos. How do you think I'm feeling?
Excellent. Probably feeling better than me. I mean, I'm not feeling great. But nonetheless, I'm still ready to talk about football. And so Oli Roos, let's start there, because you just watched that game. And they go down on penalties in the end to Korea. But pretty good performance from all accounts, and also quite a rotated team as well. Because this tournament, which is, you know, as you've mentioned to me, is invitational, and maybe Tony Vidmar thought it's a good opportunity to experiment and see what depth he's got coming up for these Olympic qualifiers, or the Asian Cup, which acts as Olympic qualifying, you know. And I think he's probably going to come out of that feeling pretty good about the depth, I guess, in the squad, because I think a rotated team did pretty well there. What did you make of the performance there, and then even the Egypt game, and then they also had the Iraq game, of course, to start the tournament in this weird tournament format that the AFC had for this year.
Yeah, I guess I'd just start by saying that the Iraq game was the sign for me that everything was very calm and good within the camp, because looking back, you know, when the whole sort of cycle started, I think most observers would agree that the Morris Revello tournament last winter was when the current crop sort of came together. And there was this sort of weird metric where they were impressing, but it's near on impossible at Olympic level, at under 23 level, under 21s level, to gauge if the opposition is actually quality. You know, you don't really know who you're up against. And I think for me, looking specifically at this sort of West Asian invitational tournament, the Iraq game, as it's now emerged in the immediate aftermath of the tournament, Iraq had culled their team and were essentially playing the under-20s, which explains the really fast start that they ended up having in that game to sort of set the tempo for the rest of the tournament. But what was intriguing about it to me was that, you know, it was the first time we'd ever really seen an Australian football team be assertive and just take the game straight off the bat, play a really exciting attacking brand of football. You go back to the Morris Revello tournament, the qualifiers in Tajikistan, the whole cycle that we've had now, and we have a team that's playing unlike, you know, many other youth programs that I've ever seen in my time as someone that's followed Australian football.
But, yeah, in Australian football, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, I've had other journos pointed out, you know, on social media. I've had a lot of people that I've been DMing about this as well. Vidmar really is trying to be assertive and proactive, you know, especially with the attacking style that they're playing. Something that was fascinating in this game is, you know, instead of being a side that's going to come and play tournament football, whether it be the Morris Revello, whether it be an invitational, whether like this, or whether it actually be the Olympics, should they make it, what you'll find is you'll find in a team that actually can adapt, but also really take the game by the scruff of the neck. And I think we've seen an example of that. The Iraq game, they're 2-0 up within 15 minutes. They're showing their value through a lot of talent in there, be it, you know, Jake Holman, be it Garen Kuol. You know, the players are really stepping up at the level that they know they can be at, and it's really, really good to see. This South Korea game in particular, just to sort of, you know, cut a long story short, they've been in a phase of play here where they actually have been the better side. They've been progressing, they've been playing the attacking football. South Korea are left being the ones who are actually on the counter. After the swap is made, the quadruple sub is made, Okon makes the mistake, they cut through, score the goal, 2-1 down. And all of a sudden, the risks that they weren't taking when they were being more direct in front of net became, Milanovic is going to have a shot outside the box. It was Australia's first shot outside the box the whole game. You know what I mean? So they're actually picking up with it, being assertive. And so they're showing their prowess, like in that early stage of the Iraq game, where they can put goals on the board early. But they're also being proactive, where they're down a peg, they're going to come back into it. And in a tournament scenario, that's perfect. But it's especially perfect here because with the draw, no offense to Qatar, who didn't even come to a tournament hosted in West Asia, which was very surprising to a lot of people. No disrespect to Jordan, who will be very competitive. Iraq, we already know that they were heavily rotating the squad as well, so the group will be tough. Indonesia as well. Sorry, Iraq's not in the group; it's Indonesia, the fourth team. But no disrespect to those opponents, but we should easily top the group from the sample of football that we've seen, and it means that we will play either Japan or South Korea in the Group B quarterfinalist. If it is the same South Korean team that we've played, we have just exhibited that this team can be making a Nation Cup semi-final, no problem.
So what you're saying is basically there's an adaptability with what the team's showing that kind of bodes well. I mean, so the last time they actually lost in 90 minutes, I believe, was that semi-final of the Maurice Ravelo tournament, which I think was against Panama. 2-1, got it here. I mean, that's what like you're a couple few months removed from a whole year without losing a game in 90 minutes. Like, you have to be pretty happy with that. And I know because some of their performances, like for example, I'm going back and I'm just trying to remember some of these games. I think like they had the friendlies in November, and I remember I think when they played Iraq, not Iraq, a Qatar, and they beat them 2-1, and a lot of people seemed like very kind of not very what's the word, convinced by that. And then they also drew with Tajikistan at the Asian Cup, and no, not at the Asian Cup, in the Asian Cup qualifier. And I think a lot of people seemed very like turned off at times by like maybe Tony Vidmar and his approach to tactically to what the team was doing. But then it's like, well, they beat France at the Maurice Ravelo tournament. Like, they've what you just said there, they've shown that they can compete with a rotated team against South Korea, who like you say, they might be playing against to make the Olympics. Like, I think it's a pretty steady team at the moment. And the adaptability thing too, like, you could argue that's kind of a trait they've maybe taken from the Socceroos in a way, because with their ability to in against maybe teams they're not as fancied against to beat, of actually being a bit more adaptable and being able to play kind of a performance where you can't literally dominate the ball the whole time. You have to sit in at periods, and all that. Like we just seen there in the South Korea game too. And Milanovic obviously hit the post. That was a big chance, which could have they could have won this game in normal time too. What is going on with the AFC's format of this tournament? Because it's just bizarre, right? Just a normal kind of standard day at the office in at the AFC, right?
Yeah, so it's actually the people who were running the tournament was actually WAF, the West Asian Football Federation. It is still overseen by the AFC and FIFA, though, so like they have a say in what decisions are made. But it was bizarre that they've had to essentially see, because they wanted to conserve for the losers. They didn't want teams to travel, especially the East Asian invitees. They didn't want them to travel, just play the one game and bugger off. So instead of doing it like a bracket, they've had to find a way where they can justify having a fifth or seventh place playoff, so they can at least come and play two games. And it's ironic in that the two East Asian teams ended up making the final anyway. And then obviously Thailand played, I want to say, the UAE. But anyway, they've ended up basically making one game a group. And I don't know. I'll tell you, I was talking to a Japanese journalist, Yasu, I forget his surname, but he works for a little bit for the SBS and does a lot of like Japanese translation. And he's a big football guy, so he comes over to Glory Games a lot, and we just have a chat about all things AFC because he's obsessed with the AFC. I'm obsessed with the AFC. No one in, A-League circles gives a fuck. So we just chat shit about this. And I showed him the format. I showed him the format, and I shit you know what his reaction was. He just looks at me. Just looks at me and goes, oh, what the fuck is this? So yeah, I don't know. It was a bizarre tournament format, but I think the thing is, they didn't really, they weren't invited to the tournament. It wasn't one of those things where like we can say, oh, we were really grateful to be invited. I think it was actually the inverse. The West Asian countries got more from us being there and Egypt being there as well, than we would have got from them. So yeah, in that respect, I actually think it was quite nice, playing against sides that we'll be able to benchmark ourselves up against a lot really well. I think in the tournament is absolutely valuable, given that Graham Arnold pulled what many consider to be a choke job at the Tokyo Games against Egypt. We've just come back 2 years, 3 years later, and beaten that exact same team. Well, not the exact same team, different names, but the same program from the Egypt under 23s. And I mean, if that isn't the biggest sign of progress and what really hammers home the point about how impressive this team has been over the last 2 years, I mean, you're seeing the evidence right there, So I think the tournament's worked out really, really well. And I'm really pleased to see with the rotation in names, with the players that we expect to be X-factor players stepping up in those ways. Both of the quals were fantastic. Someone that I really actually want to give a shout out to, Mark Natter. Now, when he was sort of playing for the Wanderers, came over to the Jets, it was sort of a nothing move, but clearly there's been enough in him with the age bracket that he's in to be able to see him, to pick him out for an Australian youth program. And he stepped up in a really big way. He made some really crucial tackles. He really sort of stood out as someone that when, Tony Vidmarsh wanted to see that rotation, he's the kind of name you're looking at to see stand up as a pretty big presence. And when you've got some insanely talented East Asian players, coming at you in what is essentially a tournament final. I mean, it's a farce of a tournament, I get that, but it is. It's a situation where you really want to
Well,
get in.
you could definitely see that both the teams there gave a shit, like they wanted to
Yeah,
win.
yeah.
So, yeah.
100%, and that's a situation where I think Mark's been very unafraid and stood up in a really big way. And as opposed to a lot of those other guys who have European experience, he's someone that I believe has solely been in Australia his career. So, yeah, just a player that I wanted to shout out for a good performance as well. But also something that really caught me out on the depth, and I was doing some research on this last night. There are some players in Europe themselves. Perhaps their clubs didn't release them, and that's why they're not here. But I'm thinking of the likes of Caleb Watts with Southampton and now Exeter City. Nowhere to be found within the last few cycles, actually. He maybe played the Tajikistan series, but I don't remember off the top of my head. And you look through the names in that team. Cameron Papion at Brighton was eligible to be selected and wasn't. And I understand a lot of this probably does come down to the clubs. But there is so much depth that was not even remotely close to being in this team. So you could actually argue within the under 23s, so that was maybe their third, even fourth string team. It
Sometimes
really
even,
is.
yeah, and sometimes
That's
even,
true.
I mean, that's something that Graham Arnold said about the Socceroos as well, too, about building depth. And it's clearly something that they've focused on throughout the whole, all the programs. And like sometimes, like maybe there's still, I think actually, look at the Olyroos team, like it probably has more creativity in it than the Socceroos. Like, like there's more technical players, there's more guys capable of, beating a player 1v1, creating in between the lines, all this sort of stuff. But sometimes it's even if you don't maybe have the quality and depth, just having different options, just having different guys that you can look to in certain games and bring off the bench. Like, the Egypt game, like you've got Milanovic and Volupele on the bench, for example, like two very different wingers who could just change the game depending on what's going on. And then like the other thing is guys like Stephen Hall, Giuseppe Bovolina, Tommy Waddingham, like these boys are young. That's young for an under 23 team, right? Like they're getting pushed quite early. And I mean, no credit to them. I think they're all deserving of it. I mean, Stephen Hall, Jesus Christ, like talk about a guy who's punching above his weight. My God. He's he I mean, Yeah, I have to see more, but he might be better than Joe Gauchy. He literally might be. In like no, not right now, not right now. As in,
Yeah, I know. I know. You just mean
sorry, don't
potential wise, but
Adelaide United fans or no, not Adelaide or anyone else listening. Don't aggregate that.
I know
But
we've, but just on that note, I know we've always prided ourselves on goalkeepers being the one position where Australia's an Australian team or an Australian setup has always been really comfortable. But Jack Wyszorski stood out as like one of the best players in that under 20s campaign in Uzbekistan, whenever it was, late last year. And he's someone that, again, wasn't even in the squad. You got Paddy Beach starting most of those games. Cameron Cook didn't get any minutes. Stephen Holl's an exceptional talent, wasn't there. So,
That's what I mean. Like,
speaks
you know,
volumes.
sometimes we complain about I don't know, maybe like our depth and stuff, but like Cameron Cook's on the bench. Like Cameron Cook didn't see a minute in this tournament. And like this is a guy who what started 10 games at least in the A-League this season and was keeping, you know, a New Zealand international out of the team for a little bit. Like that's not bad. Like if you're just talking in terms of caliber of player. And yeah, I mean, and then some other guys who were given a chance today. We've seen like Reece Yulee, Franco Lino.
Franco Lino, what an X factor. He's really come from nowhere, right? Like,
Well, we might have seen him more if Tony Popovich actually bothered to use him. But you know, that's a different argument. But then in the wide areas, like all of a sudden, hey. Remember Adrian Šegečić? Like, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
no, you're right. Like, when you really look into it, there's some good options. And hey, Jacob Italiano as well. Your boy, because obviously, WA
What is
boy.
going on with that man's career? He is Stuart Munson-Gladbach. He's been
I
there for
know.
like
And it's
seven.
like,
He's been there for like 7 years.
it's also like, holy shit, he's still young enough to be in the Olyroos.
Yeah, my thoughts exactly.
All right. Any other thoughts on the Olyroos?
Look, I'm just going to reiterate what I said in the article, and I think it's true. The expectation on a youth national team, has it ever been this high? Like, have we ever really gone into a campaign like this and thought, this is a team that is like guaranteed to be playing in the matches that matter? I think back to, this time, 3 or 4 years ago, when we qualified for the Tokyo Games. And don't get me wrong, names like, Nick D'Agostino, who were punching above their weight at A-League level at the time, there was a squad there that we had a right to be confident in. But I think the fact that we ended up getting through that quarter final was still actually something of a shock. And we didn't think we would be in contention for it. It was something that we sort of almost stumbled upon. And then, all of those names that came in later, especially Sutar was in the camp, J. Rich Bagaloo, the emergence of Caleb Watts. I don't think any of them were actually, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think any of them were actually in the squad in the cycle before that. So I look at the continuation of the Olyroos program, and I don't actually know that Graham Arnold did a lot to set it up correctly, as much as we've just found the right talent and actually done what the development of Australian football's wanted to do this whole time, and it's just have the talent sitting around. So it's a fascinating case study, but I am talking less development and more just on the results here, because at the end of the day, under 23's football isn't actually really a development pathway. It is
No.
there to host the Olympics, so we should actually be criticizing them on their results basis.
Yeah.
And on their results basis, I don't think you can criticize them. You know
No.
what I mean? So, like, we have a right to go to believe that we can win that Asian Cup, to believe that we can actually comfortably be booking a ticket for Paris, and that's incredible to me.
Okay. Yeah. Get pumped. Get pumped about the Olyroos, basically. Actually, whilst you mentioned your piece from last week where you previewed the month ahead for the national teams, give us like a few words on some of the other national teams that everyone should be plugged into in this period
Yep.
coming
So
up.
the under 17s girls will back up from the under 20s. They'll go off to their respective Asian Cup. That tournament is pretty fucking stacked, I'll be honest with you. I don't actually think they can guarantee getting out of their group so confidently as what the under
Awesome
20s
vote of
did.
confidence. Awesome.
I expect China and Japan to be pretty bloody good, let me put it that way. They'll have a tough time, but as I said, I think they won the Southeast Asian Championship. So, we have a history of being able to perform at that level. We'll see how they go, but yeah, no guarantees. That's just after April. That's the first week of May. And the futsal rules, I just wanted to touch on very quickly as well. Absolutely fucking incredible result against Thailand, marred by the fact that they then somehow lost to Afghanistan a few days later. But I think that the futsal program as well, you can actually see that the FA, making up for the dropping of the funding throughout the mid 2010s by really caring about futsal, putting it at the forefront. The media coverage of it has been fantastic. Miles is someone that, he's been all over the world for the good of futsal.
You
He's
mean like
incredibly rich.
the in-house media coverage of it, as in terms of
Sorry.
the FA pushing it.
But I just,
Because
yeah.
I think maybe we're the only publication outside of that that's actually talking about the Futsal Roos anyway.
Yikes. But look, I think in the same way that we can be confident about the Oli Roos, I think the Futsal Roos have a very exciting campaign ahead of themselves. They're the 11th seed in the tournament, still a very, very realistic chance to, in the same fashion of that Oli Roos team, have a quarterfinals matchup with Thailand or Vietnam. And when, you just have to a bit of a hit and hope, see how they go. But
So
they should
is
be
that the
really
same where they
good
have to
group.
make, you confirm this one, where they have to make the semi-final to qualify for the World Cup?
It's basically you finish in the top four. Asia usually gets four or five seeds in these tournaments. Just make the top four. Obviously, again, Uzbekistan is hosting the World Cup in September. So
So they're
if
in, yep.
Uzbekistan go really far, then it gets a bit fucked with having to go off into splinter playoffs and things like that. And yeah, I don't actually I'm I can't be fucked doing the math and figuring out who we'd have to play and figure it out. So just
Fair enough.
get past the group first, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, beat them comfortably, and then yeah, we'll figure it out.
All right. Socceroos. We've got about 15 minutes to talk about them. So, they score 7 goals. They don't concede. And I'm pretty sure there's still probably some Graham Arnold bitters out there who are like keyboard warring and like just losing their shit over stuff.
My read of what happened on social media was because it was only 1-0 and there was a fairly defensive brand of football being played, people had their pitchforks out for Arnie. I have no idea why.
To be fair, look, the Sydney performance wasn't great, I'll be honest.
No.
But sometimes if you're playing two games maybe at home over a 6 day period, whatever it is, week period, that first game might always be a little bit more rusty, and then you kind of build into it with the second game, and that's kind of what happened here, right? They've
Yeah,
yeah like
but
they
I think the
yeah
point here is that people holding this team to expectations that they wouldn't struggle against a team that's going to play on the back foot when we are never a team that's played well against teams on the back foot. It's just ridiculous, right? Well, what is the
True.
point in criticizing? So, and they've scored 7 goals across both games. So realistically,
Yeah. I know.
arguably, what is the
But
problem,
that's what I'm Jake was on here, was it 2 weeks ago now? And we were talking about Ernie Merrick's comments recently about the program and stuff and what they're, the Asian Cup performances. And he said, and I agree with him, it's like we just don't have the caliber of player to like we're not Japan, we're not Korea, like we can't just break down teams at will. Like it's not like that. What I did like is, well, what I was intrigued by was this 3-1-4-2 system that Socceroos used in these two games, which is actually, Matt, Alan Stadgic has used this a couple of times for Perth this season too, with that one midfielder at the base and then two strikers, two tens, and it's just really attacking. And they kind of, I think Arnie was forced into it because of Aziz Bajic's injury and because Kai Rolls was playing basically as a left back out of possession, so it's kind of easier to play him as a left centre back in possession. And I liked it. And then I felt, well, that in the second game they obviously started to get a bit more comfortable with it, and then when you got a guy like Craig Goodwin who's kind of perfectly suited to it, not bad either. And then there's probably a little bit of that with Lebanon too in the second game where they're just like, okay, like fuck this, like, we just don't have the quality to compete with these guys. And they probably just, their heads went down, and you know, that happens. So yeah, but the other thing with Goodwin, which I wanted to pose with you, was his Asian Cup campaign, I don't think went to his expectations, right? And I think because there was, you know, a feeling, well, it was weird, right? Because apparently Arnie said he was injured, and then he said, no, I feel fine. Like, it was this weird kind of thing that was kind of brewing during the tournament in the group stage. And I felt like that was a little bit of a, like, statement last night, his performance. It was like, hey, listen, like, I'm in your best team. Like, don't count me out, you know? Yeah. I don't know what you read into it, but yeah.
I think it's interesting. Just because on the Asian Cup itself, it was obviously him that stood up and scored an absolute screamer in the quarterfinal, right? And then, you know, he comes out and you can actually see the difference, especially talking with the contrast of how the Sydney game turned out. You put a player like Craig Goodwin on the pitch who is just going to, in every way, shape and form, be prominent, you know, go into the right areas, be an attacking threat, completely just, like, demolish the Lebanese backline. He's the X factor on that literally puts the extra two or three goals on the board when you're playing this caliber of opponent. Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, you know, the thing is as well is, like, so we just said it then that the Socceroos in open play are not the best team at all when it comes to breaking down, you know, a low block and a team which sits back. So guess what? If you got one of the best set piece takers in Asia, like, is that hyperbolic to call Goodwin one of the best set piece takers in Asia? Like, I think he might be. I don't know.
Honestly, it's a fair shout.
Yeah, and you know, it's quite nice. I mean, look, I'm not saying Arnie, like, isn't favoring him. Like, obviously, like, he played him in that quarterfinal, and Goodwin scored the big goal against South Korea. But I think, you know, you've got someone like Jordy Boss now, who's coming up. Obviously, you know, we have to see what's going on with his injury. But there's some other options there. Maybe Goodwin's just saying, look, I might be older, but just, you know, I'm still good enough to start and contribute on a regular basis. And you're right, like, it does seem in these games now that he's kind of able to just take it by the scruff of the neck and yeah, contribute in a very heavy way. So yeah, it's good to see. And for Antonis, yeah, it was a pretty SA great SA great theme flavor to
sad,
what was happening
sorry,
last night.
Sorry, sad morning for our friend Antonis. Georgia have qualified for the Euros this morning. Incredible story, cultural, sporting, otherwise, but of course it's at the behest of Greece.
Greece not make the Euros.
Georgia have beaten them on penalties. Yep.
Oh, because I haven't, obviously, like, yeah, I've basically just...
Yeah. Yeah. That's all right. Just a shout out to Antonis.
That is hilarious.
And Greek people in general. You know, me being me, I'm really intrigued in just sort of the cultural, sporting, political dynamics of a country like Georgia being at the Euros. I think it's fucking fantastic. But, you know, there are a lot of people in football circles who are, in fact, Greek. So
there's going to be a lot of people.
take that copium, boys. I'm sorry.
Well, it's going to be a lot of angry Australian Greek football fans are going to be sliding into your DMs later. So, and the other part of the game last night in Canberra, we saw, yeah, first Socceroos goals for Cassini Yangian and John Iredale, or Iredale. I think it's Iredale, yeah. But Iredale was really a lot easier to say, so I might just occasionally say that. And we also saw Patrick Yazbek and Josh Nisbet get debuts. When you go back and, like, because I think the A-League's account, everyone's like posting about Nisbet's debut. Are there going to be tears as well? Because there might be tears for me when I see it.
Nizzy's development and the way he's come across as a product is really the embodiment of what we want the A-League to be. But I actually, as a Western Australian, I'm more concerned with Iredale for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that both John and Jack, respectively, have really shown that grinder mindset that, you know, I've heard Tony Vidmar talk about as Oli Roos coach. You know, I've heard Graham Arnold speak to in recent times. The reason why it feels like we're on the verge of golden generation two is because of guys that go to Europe and they don't see the A-League as home comfort anymore and they fucking slug it out in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
He's been playing in the German second tier. You think he has home comforts in the German second tier. Of course he doesn't. He's had to grind his way out in a very, very competitive European football environment. And that is all of it. Him posting like 3,000 tweets, thanking his wife and his children and his uncle with...
He is very active on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what was going on, but you've just scored your first goal for the Socceroos. And just fair play, like that right now. And I think it's a testament also to the fact that local football in WA does have talent, because our NPL, rightfully so, gets a lot of slack. I'm not going to, be at the behest of that. But just because, the Alex Salmons and the, his name isn't coming to me, Liam Boland and all these guys who have sort of gone on to just be domestic products, that is not just the value of the MPLWA. There are hidden nuggets out there, and the Iridales, they were a product of it. So, for me, it speaks to two things. It speaks about the depth of quality that does exist on Australian shores, and it also speaks about that grinder mentality of guys who go to Europe and make it big. So John Iridale scoring for the Socceroos is a pretty big win, win for us.
Mm. I did not expect the MPLWA to come up in the chat, but it has. He was a youth player, obviously, at Sydney FC, and he was at Sydney FC as 2017, I think, was when he left. So that was when Arnie was obviously still there. So there's some kind of relationship there.
Yep.
From earlier. And yeah, then he's, like you said, he's just gone, fuck it, I'm going to Germany. And yeah, he's grinded it out. And, now he's got himself in a position where he could be, who knows, a regular squad player in the Socceroos setup. So credit to him. And there's some other stuff where with the Socceroos. Joel King getting called up. No. And I know.
Do you know what's funny? Yeah. The most memorable moment of Joel King's career and legacy is him walking down the hallway taking a selfie with Leo Messi. I'm sorry, but like if that's what you're known for in an Australian uniform, when I think of Joel King being decent and him rating him, it was when he's got when he got his first initially got his move to Denmark. Was that not 3 years ago?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? He's come back.
It's like the cycle's changed for everyone else, but Joel King.
Yeah, exactly. He's actually going backwards.
Yeah, it's actually no. We're still in 2019 with Joel King, sorry. Or whenever the hell he was in Denmark. Yeah. Bizarre. Hang on. Is Joel King still eligible for the Oli Roos out of interest?
Because
I was going to say.
Call me on that.
Hang on.
You've actually called me on that. He could be 22.
He's 23. He turns 24 in October. So does that mean that he...
October. No, I think the cutoff date for the Olympics is September.
No, I was just saying if he was to go to the WAF Championship right now, or the one that's just happened.
I think he'd miss out by a few months, right?
He'd miss out. Okay. Because I was just about to say, if you swap Jordan Courtney Perkins and Joel King, just swap them in the two squads they're in right now, would anyone complain?
Would anyone know? No.
Yeah, no.
No.
So, yeah, it's just bizarre. No, I don't like it because it's like, you're big on this too. Like the shirt, like it's there's significance to it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like you can't just be handing out caps because it's like, oh, well, you know, Joel's been here before and I need a backup left back. So
yeah,
fuck it, Joel, come in here,
I understand that's a big reason why people are pissed off with Arnie, because Arnie very clearly has favorites. This is the whole Mitch Langerak saga and that playing out again. If Arnie has a preference for you, and a lot of it, call a spade, it's a direct correlation with Sydney FC as well. I think a lot of that really, really can tick people off. But, I still kind of have a lot of faith in Arnie to be in the job and to get things done. You know what I mean? So yeah. it goes both ways.
Yeah, yeah. The Canberra aspect of this, because, and we've spoken about this on the podcast, a couple of podcasts recently, the whole Canberra stuff, so we're not going to get into. But
I spoke about it on Dub as well.
And you spoke about it on Dub, obviously, too. Go check that out. But the crowd the positive, the positive Canberra story, which is 25,000 at GIO Stadium, and that surpasses what's a new all-time record for a football match at the stadium, surpassing a previous record set at the Sydney Olympics 24 years ago. So, you know, does this just? Oh, I'll put this to you. Does it reinforce a need for a men's team in Canberra?
Can I be honest with you? No.
No, no. Explain.
Okay, yeah. I thought you wanted to wrap this podcast up by 7 a.m.
Yeah, no, We will. I've got you can give me your Canberra thoughts, and then I've got one more thing to pose to you, and then we are done.
Okay. All good. I think that this is more to do with the national teams and how popular the national teams are, more than anything else. I don't think people can point to really good crowds, because at the end of the day, this is a reference you didn't see coming at all. Do you remember the like Usain Bolt thing where the Mariners played like a Southwest Sydney Invitational 11? And then
for some reason, because Niz, did you see? Sorry, just quickly. For some reason, because Nisbet obviously made his Socceroos debut last night, there was like a picture circulating again of like Nisbet and Usain Bolt on the side
warming up on the bench. Actually, that's the perfect segue to mention it. Do you remember when they played the Invitational game against the Southwest Sydney 11? From like the region at Campbelltown Stadium, and the then MacArthur bid came out and was like, oh my God, look at this incredible crowd we pulled. Context is important, right? They weren't there because they love football and they want to support local football.
They were there because they were so invested in Gino Mara's project.
But you know, context is important, and I understand the segue is a little bit comical, all things considered, but for anyone in Canberra football to point the finger and go, we attracted this really good crowd. Look, I'm sorry, but the Socceroos and the Matildas happen to be very good football sides at the moment. Well, maybe not. Okay. But they happen to be very successful football sides at the moment. Let me say that much.
Sorry.
But the thing is, like,
a million listeners just did that in their head.
The point is, we're at a point where like the FA are running football exceptionally well, and the national teams are going to bring in a big crowd. That is all that is. Don't read into it.
Please, elite level football, very well. Yes, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And
important to make that distinction. I feel, yeah,
yeah. No, that's okay. Sorry, the grassroots and the A-League haters are all after us now. But seriously, I mean. We have had this conversation a lot. We are a bit too focused on the metrics, and we like to point the fingers and ask these big questions and go, look at what this crowd did, and look at what that crowd did, and look at what they're building in this community. And if we go back over a decade, I'm sorry, but in like 9 out of 10 cases, this has always been proven to be bullshit. So I hear that and I go, oh yeah, the ACT did have a really good crowd. But like the thing is, they care about rugby union and rugby league more, and like people still think the Raiders and the Brumbies are a joke. So how will football really go down in Canberra? You tell me. During summer, when people don't live there, how will it go down? Tell me. I'm just pointing to simple facts. And I'm not saying Canberra shouldn't have a team, because they'll comfortably be able to get the metrics that the A-League expect. They'll be able to comfortably seat 5,000, 6,000 people to a game. I'm not saying they wouldn't. But that's what we're talking about here. So just be realistic with it.
All right, last thing. So now soccer is qualified for the third round, of course, and it basically means that the two games in June against Bangladesh and Palestine are dead rubbers. So what's your kind of like, hey, Arnie, can you please do X, Y, and Z? This is what I want to see for the dead rubbers.
I mean,
I'm putting you on the spot, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I guess I would want to see some rotation, but that rotation be with intent. We need someone to really, talk about Craig Goodwin's X factor. We need to bring that in. We have this Ollie Roos team that are performing really well. What if Nish, Jake Holman, any of these guys come out, Sekicic come out, and they actually provide a really good X factor on the wing, obviously, the timing of that friendly in June, thank the Lord I'll be in camp for it, which I'm really excited about. But that friendly in June timing with the Olympics might actually be rough, if not impossible, or it should actually be about a few weeks apart. Maybe it is. but I don't know if there is any young players in the setup that Arnie would want to take a punt on. And I think he should. I think he should because I don't want to go in two dead rubbers playing safe. I know that, Bangladesh is a location that we've been before in recent history, and it's going to be a rough place to play. It just will be. South Asia is just the climate and adjusting and everything like that. It'll be tough, but I still want to see the right amount of experiment. I still want to see that brand of football that we're talking about here. So that would just be my message is rotate, but rotate with intent.
Yeah, interesting. Could we see a name just kind of plucked out of nowhere that maybe no one was thinking, but it's kind of flown under the radar. Who knows? Can Nisbet, hey Arnie, can Nisbet start both games? Provided he's obviously still at the top of his game by then, that'd be awesome. All right, Matt, top stuff, top work. You're doing some great stuff recently. Go check out if you haven't already. Matt did, national teams preview last week, and he also did an interview with Daniel Benny of Perth Glory, which you can go and read. That's on the site too. Matt, any closing remarks?
The Oly Roos will kick off their Asian Cup campaign on the 15th of March, and I believe the Futsal Roos start their campaign in Thailand that same
The
week.
15th of May.
No, March. No, April.
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 Yeah, I was like, no, sorry. I was like, hang on a minute. They kick off the campaign 12 days
Basically, you have to understand that the second that date comes, whenever the fuck it is, my brain and my ability to function and my work-life balance is out the window because I'm going to consume so much fucking random AFC football content. I'm not going to become a human being. I'm going to morph into something else, and it will be a very, very special month for me across April. Okay, but yeah, that's it.
I don't think, just for the people listening at home, I don't, there's, th this guy's like sleep schedule when it comes to like, when it comes to tournaments is kind of just wild. All right, Front Page Football, make sure you're following us on social media, at Front PG Football, Twitter and Instagram, Front Page Football on Facebook, LinkedIn, we're on there as well, Threads, and oh yeah, Spotify here. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, chuck us a follow. Comment below. What would you like Arnie to do for those dead rubber games in June? What's on your priority list? We'd love to know. All right, but without further ado, that'll do it for another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I should be back on Friday for the second episode of the week. And until next time, it's bye for now.